So we're all very enthusiastic about hackerspaces, and we want to infect all of you with that enthusiasm. So thanks for coming. Me and Matt have been traveling around the country for the last month teaching people how to solder at hackerspaces. And Matt's a blogger at Make Magazine. I'm an inventor. I created remote control that turns TVs off in public places. And Chris is a student here at UW and does a lot of, we're all hardware hackers. So hackerspaces aren't all hardware hacking. This talk might show more examples of hardware hacking because we're kind of hardware centric. But they're very diverse things. We'll show our contact stuff again at the end. But hackerspaces are a relatively new phenomenon with this new wave of them going around, but they've been around for a long time, starting in the U.S., but then really taking off in this new form in Germany. The new form of hackerspaces are very open, very diverse. There are some things they have in common, but each one is unique. But when you go to a hackerspace, you know you're in a hackerspace. Even if you can't tell why, it's like porn. So that is a hackerspace. That's NoiseBridge's first space. I co-founded NoiseBridge in San Francisco. We outgrew our first space after 3 months, and we moved into 5,200 square feet. We have about 100 members. It's thriving. There's classes of all sorts, many of them every day, classes and workshops. It's a place where people can come and hang out. People can just pop by and see what's happening. It's really amazing. NoiseBridge is a unique hackerspace, just like all the rest. And as we talk about our respective spaces, you'll see they're very different but have some things in common. These are some things that most hackerspaces have, but all of them have what's on top of the list there, and that's community. So one of the reasons why we are all here at this bar camp is because, well, first of all, we're all geeks. But that means something different for each one of us. We all have different interests and things that we're super enthusiastic about. But we come together in community where we can share our enthusiasm and learn from other people. Those other things on the list kind of fall out from there as far as I see it. But this is part of a growing movement. 2 years ago, there were 50 hackerspaces in the world, and now there's several hundred, mostly in the U.S. And it's really amazing to be a part of all of this. And if any of you want to start joining in, if you live in Madison, this cool new hackerspace that I found out about, Sector 67, is here. And we're really not just shaping the hackerspace that we're a part of, but since all hackerspaces really learn from each other, we're part of forming whatever this movement is we're a part of, and we really don't know where it's going. So it's just another form of it's also a hackerspace, sort of a hackerspace. This is a for-profit company that has amazing tools that are super extensive, and they have a lot of classes on how to use them, but they share many of these same qualities, especially community. Tech shop that started in San Jose and is now starting up spaces all over the country. So a hackerspace is a physical space. That's the space part, and hacker is the first part. So what is a hacker? Well, one of the reasons why we can't say exactly what a hackerspace is because it's hard to say exactly what a hacker is. If you ask 1,000 people what a hacker is, you'll get 1,000 different answers. But again, there's a lot of overlap. But for me, it's someone who is enthusiastic about what they want to learn about. They're enthusiastic about some realm that they really love. They learn as much as they can about it. They improve upon it and share as much as possible what they know with the rest of the world if people want to learn. One of the key qualities is that we do what we love. whether or not it makes money for us. And there's nothing wrong with making money of what you love. In fact, that's a great thing, and I hope that's something that grows from the whole hackerspace movement. And it has been something that has been happening quite a bit, is that people find, especially in economic downtimes, when a lot of people find themselves with more time on their hands, that we can use our creativity to do what we love and then find creative ways of making enough money to support ourselves doing it. And people support each other in doing that at hackerspaces. And that's one of the things, one of the points that Sector 67 is explicitly about. And by the way, this is a picture I took at a Chaos Congress, a hacker conference in Berlin. And he was going around, of course this is a joke, but that is an AC outlet with connected to an Ethernet cable.
Ether killer.
So again, we do what we do because we love it. And that's one of the main things. And there's a picture of a brain machine workshop in the hackerspace in D.C., HackDC, one of the first hackerspaces of this new wave that we're experiencing. Me and Matt have been going around, like I said, doing workshops at hackerspaces, and Brain Machine is one of the projects we show people. That's one of my projects. It's a really bizarre thing where it blinks brainwave frequencies in your eyes with your eyes closed, and your brain works for you, synchronizes to it, and you actually meditate. But what makes it really fun is that you hallucinate brilliant colors and patterns along the way, and a lot of people seem to like hallucinating. So it's popular. Let me just whip through a few projects that have come from hackerspaces that I just think are particularly cool to me. And again, it's somewhat hardware-centric, but there are so many different things at hackerspaces besides hardware hacking. There's also most hackerspaces have industrial sewing machines, and they have huge crafting areas. Noisebridge also has a full kitchen, so we have food hacking, and people make wonderful food and share it. And we have a dark room, there's music and video, and machine shop, et cetera, et cetera. But this is a picture of a building. It's a little bit hard to see on that wall.
Yeah, this is like a, I don't know, X number of windows high. That's like a light pole outside of the, or in the foreground near the building. So this is a giant office building.
It's a giant office building in Berlin. So in Germany, unlike here in the United States, hackers are well respected. And also bizarre in Germany is that when a politician doesn't know something about a particular subject, they ask someone who is up on that subject. Very bizarre, but true. And the Chaos Computer Club is the biggest hacker organization in Germany. Their politicians often ask their opinion on various technical aspects, especially when it comes to things like the DMCA, legislation that's been going on. And a lot of it's been killed because of opinions that have come from hacker organizations like CCC. But they were given full rein over one Christmas to New Year's period of this building across the street from where they have their annual hacker conference. And they put a light bulb in each window. It's a Bauhaus glass and metal structure. So each window is a square, and about 2 meters by 2 meters square. And they put a light bulb in it, so each window turns into a pixel. And they put the software online, and people could hack it at will. And one thing leads to another, and then people could scroll text on windows when they texted in on their phone. And that led to people doing other things with phones. So the end result was that people could play Pong on the building, the first people to phone in to play Pong on the building. And it's just, I think it's cool. So, oh, and by the way, the people who are responsible for this collectively call themselves Der Blinken Lights. And here's another Der Blinken Lights project. I couldn't get a video that I could put into Microsoft PowerPoint. But if you get a chance, look for LED Cube on YouTube, and you'll see that this is this incredible animation sequence of colored lights and a 3D your brain kind of melts because you're trying to put it together, and it's cool. So, and they call it a Borg cube. And here's a sign that hacklab.to, the hackerspace in Toronto, put together with, they have wild graphics that go on in this thing that they found in the city dump. And at Noisebridge, we have a bunch of people that decided, what would happen if we got together, like a bunch of other hackerspaces, and sent a balloon up into space and took a photo of the planet. So it cost NASA how many hundreds of millions of dollars to get that photo, and it cost six people at Noisebridge collectively about $300. Here's a project that I did at a hackerspace, actually in Providence, Rhode Island, that I started in Noisebridge. I call this Trippy RGB Waves. You wave your hand over these little chess piece-sized things, and waves of color follow your hand. And I just think that's cool. I'm working on a wall-sized version of this now to put in a subway station in San Francisco.
So when people walk by, they get different colors?
Yeah, shadows will follow them. Different colors. So, this is from an annual robotics conference in Vienna called Robo Exotica, and it's a conference that is only robots that make cocktails. That one in the upper right corner makes the best mojitos possible. That's actually about 20 feet long, and it's totally crazy looking. It doesn't have to be, but it's cooler when it is. And it makes the most outrageous clinking noises. But when it's done, at the end of this conveyor belt, out pops the perfect mojito. And this other guy on the right makes cocktails of your choice made out of Legos. It's the whole thing's made entirely out of Lego parts. It's too bad it's kind of bright in here, but I don't know if you can see that one down there is a remotely controlled robot that serves people beer. So it's a really fun way to get people together to work on serious robotics, but in a really fun environment. Because a lot of the whole hackerspace scene is all about fun. You know, if you're doing what you love, it's going to be fun. And by the way, Noisebridge stickers, Hack Pittsburgh stickers, and no stickers yet from Sector 67, but cards if you want information. Stickers are a fun way that hackerspaces get the word out, or cards. So,
hint.
Get stickers.
I got to
So here's another project. These people make their living on this project. It's a project that grew out of NYC Resistor, one of the first hackerspaces of this new wave, along with HackBC and also Noisebridge and the Hackery in Philadelphia. RepRap is an international project that has an audacious long-term goal of a robot that will be able to reproduce itself. So right now, it's in the early stages, and we have these printing robots that print out parts for itself, or parts for the next generation. There were three people at NYC Resistor that were working on RepRap, and it was really hard. It's this international project. All the plans are online. It's all open source. But making it each time wasn't all that replicatable, and this is all about replication. So they decided to make kits that would be the same every time you make it, and they've had a kit for the part that puts out the plastic layers and parts for the motor controllers, but eventually they decided to make a whole entire 3D printer kit, and that's what the MakerBot is. That's about this big. And anyone who's fairly skilled at doing things with hardware could build one of these in about a week. And it's a 3D printer. If you have a 3D image on your representation of an image on your screen, you press the print button, and 5 minutes to 2 hours later, depending on how complex it is, you'll have a plastic version of it that you can hold and you know, a whistle you can blow, a fork, TV-gone case. Someone even printed out when I was in Vienna, they broke one of their foosball table little men. They printed one of those out. Anything you want, you can print out of this as long as it fits in about this volume.
So it uses a pool of polymer and laser sinters it and goes up 200ths of an inch and winds up.
There's somebody who's built one that's like that. They have a laser sintering one, but the MakerBot version, it's actually like a hot glue gun.
Okay.
So it's like, imagine a computer-controlled hot glue gun where it starts at the table level and it kind of squeezes the hot glue out and makes a pattern, and then it moves up a little bit and does the same pattern again, or vice versa. So in that case...
Really small.
Yeah, so it's a real small nozzle. It starts with 3-millimeter polymer plastic, usually ABS or PLA, which is pretty popular, and then squeezes it out of what's called a hot end. The hot basically melts the plastic, and then the bed can move, and then the head increments up.
Yeah, little
layer by layer.
Thin layer at a time.
You can see little layers, yeah.
Yeah, you can see little layers. So that one, the machine wasn't set up perfectly, but it's still functional. It works well. So
this is all printed out, except for the motor and the nut and bolts. It's all printed out from MakerBot.
Yep. So that will be soon to be the hot end on the riprap that I'm building. So it's all done and it works. I just have to finish building that and make the part that makes the plastic hot enough to extrude it out and all that together. So, yeah. Just please don't drop that because that's a good effect to get for another one.
So now these people, they call it MakerBot Industries, and they make a living not for them, only for themselves, but for a very large group of people that are all friends of theirs. And likewise, TV Be Gone makes a living not only for me, but for 11 of my friends. Here's another project that's on the software side of things. The co-founder of NoiseBridge with me, Jake Applebaum, was in a group of people, some at Princeton, some around the world, who discovered that, most of us think that when you turn your computer off, the RAM, information in RAM just goes away. Well, it does, but it takes time for it to go away. And it can take quite a long time, especially if you cool off the RAM. It turns out that when they did this, that the password for your computer would be on the RAM if you took it out of someone's laptop and put it into another computer. You could extract the password from it. And at this point, Windows and Linux have fixed the problem, leaving a gaping hole. But the world needs to know about stuff like this because we are under the belief that things are more secure than they are. And corporations that put out these things that give the impression of security, it's not really in their interest to alert the world of it. And quite often, the only thing that gets corporations to fix the problems is by hackers discovering what the problems are and pointing it out to them first. If they don't fix the problem, then telling the world. So this is called cold boot attack. Like I said, most of the problems have been fixed, but there's a gaping hole there by one particular corporation. This is an example of an ongoing project at NoiseBridge. Every week, when I'm home, which is about half the time, I teach people how to solder. And it's an extremely popular class at NoiseBridge. And I have a wide variety of different projects. And most people will find at least one of them intriguing enough to try to make. And I have it so that total beginners who've never made anything or never even sewn a button before will successfully complete and enjoy completing their project that they can bring home with them. And we'll be doing one tomorrow at Sector 67 for what will soon be turning into Sector 67.
Yeah. It's tomorrow at 3 o'clock in the Sector Urban Engineering Campus and Engineering Centers building. We've got a whole pile of these, so if anybody wants one, come up and grab one.
Yeah.
Should be fun.
3 yeah.
o'clock tomorrow.
It's always fun. Yeah, it's really cool when people get together and make things. But here's something which is the most pointless project that's taken so much time and energy that I've ever come across in my life. It's from Hackerspace in Tokyo. and they made this Rube Goldberg contraption that just every action creates the next action. Some of them are on a video screen with a sensor that causes something mechanical to happen. This is a really long video. I start speeding it up here. Sewing machines, toilet paper, light bulbs, anything they could get their hand on from their city dome. And I just think it's totally beautiful. And they call their space Anchor Lab, but it's spelled with a 4, 5, and a 6 in it. And they call it the Way Sensing Go, which is very Japanese. So,
all your bases.
Yeah, so, just get back to just hackerspaces in general. Everyone needs community. Everyone on our planet needs community, and there's precious little of it. And we try to get community in all of these ways that are incredibly inadequate, like the internet. It's great if you have nothing else. People can get together and learn so much. And if you're in the middle of a rural area, it's incredible what can happen. Whereas without it, we're on our own. But hackerspaces is a way that geeks have found to create community. But the thing is, we need community. We would not be alive as a species on our planet if we didn't get together in community and support one another. It's in our DNA. And likewise, we wouldn't have survived as a species on our planet if we didn't create tools and teach other people how to use it and support each other through these tools. And just because nowadays we can go out and buy whatever we need or manipulate into thinking we need, but that's another story. It's a media literacy rap. But just because we can go out and buy anything we want doesn't mean that there's not this deep inner need to express ourselves through making things. And how that manifests in each one of us is going to be unique, which is, we're all unique individuals. Repeat after me. We're all unique. Hackerspaces bring together these two very compelling forces deep within all of us, the need for community and the need to express ourselves through making things. And they are physical spaces where we can come together, where the energy that we're experiencing at this unconference can go on every day, all year round, 24/7. So that's why I started a hackerspace, is because I experienced this kind of feeling that almost made me cry. The first time I went to a hacker conference and saw, this is a group that I can feel comfortable opening up to. We're all geeks. I don't have to explain geekiness. I can go up to someone, almost anyone, and start talking geeky, and I'm not going to be made fun of. And it's just totally wonderful. And I wanted that to be available all the time. When I got home, I knew I was going to start a hackerspace, and that's what turned me into this bridge. And hackerspaces are started by individuals, or one or two or three individuals getting together and doing it. Me and my friend Jake started Noisebridge. Chris started pretty much single-handedly Sector 67. But of course, we get help. Once you put out the word enthusiastically, it's contagious, and other people just flock to it. Because these two needs, making things, expressing ourselves through making, and the need for community are so compelling. So Sector 67, why don't you talk about
sure.
that as your baby?
Okay, so as Mitch said, I've been working, it's been about, it's almost 5 months now, is all it's been. So it hasn't been long, but I've been wrenching on Sector 67 and trying to get things started. We've got a home now. We're at 2100 Winnebago Street, which is up in the Atwood neighborhood. It's right next to an art incubator that's up there. It should be really awesome. The real estate developers that own the building are really excited, and they're really excited to get into the community that's up there. We have quite a lot of tools that I need to get moved in over the next month or two. We're going to launch on October 15th, but the lease starts on September 1st, so it's going to take like a month and a half to build everything out. So if you're interested, by all means, we do need help. We need help getting stuff.
It's a great bonding experience. Adding all the space.
Yes. We'll provide tools and wood, and we need to turn wood into workbenches and all kinds of cool stuff. So it should be a lot of fun. And then at the end of building all the stuff, we can actually use it, which might
tail off until we find some cool projects to use the workbenches to build. But the idea is to provide some of the large and expensive machines that aren't, you know, like, you can't get them normally in your house, or a lot of people don't have them, like a mill or a lathe. If you aren't familiar, a mill lets you, it's kind of like a big drill press, but it weighs like 1,000 pounds. It takes 3-phase power, sucks a lot of juice, but you can make pretty much anything.
2D or 3D?
Yeah, 2D or 3D. I've got this little cute little guy, little seesaw. But that's been all milled out. It started as a big, or 3 big blocks of aluminum, and so you can mill it down and mix up with it. A lathe is the same deal, except you usually make round things or things that are symmetric. And then a welder, obviously you're familiar with, you bond metal together. Laser cutter would be really cool to get, but they're like $12,000 right now. So if we find some generous donors in the community, we'll be getting a laser cutter. Otherwise, we'll have to start raising funds to get that going. But just with them?
What kind of welders you guys do?
I've been TIG welding for about 5 years, so I can teach all that stuff. A MIG welder, if you can TIG weld, it's kind of like playing with a hot glue gun. And a stick welder is like caveman at the rock beating the metal. So yeah, I'd like to get a AC/DC TIG welder. It'd be really nice. So I think that's something that's it's, usually a lot of people don't buy TIG welders because they're a little more expensive and they're a lot more specialized to learn. And so if we can provide that, it'll be another good resource to have. But I do have a MIG welder at home.
Yep. Do you have somebody lined up to provide that?
I don't have anyone lined up to provide
because is that something Miller Electric would?
That was, I was going to talk to Miller and talk to Lincoln.
I can see if somebody from Appleton.
That'd be cool. Yeah. Well, me. Well, we can talk afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was. So that's the big thing is we've actually got Snap-on in Kenosha too. So I have this Snap-on R&D director's email and phone number, so I'm going to call him and harass him and see whether they're interested or need a good text right up. That's the other thing that's really important is a lot of these spaces, so Mitch had alluded to earlier that Tech Shop is for-profit. A lot of the other spaces are non-profit. In the case, Section 67 is going to be a non-profit. And so we will be subsisting off of memberships and that kind of stuff, and we're not looking to make $1 billion. And the only other thing that we are looking to do, though, is to be able to provide classes and service, to do workshops, to be able to teach people how to use this stuff. So it's one thing to get a big mill and a big lathe, but we need to be able to educate people on how to use them so that they're able to build cool stuff. Do open work days. You can repair and refurbish electronics. A lot of people throw stuff away. I get made fun of because I have like 16 LCD monitors. I didn't buy them all. I got them all for free and fixed them because a lot of them have things that go bad, but it's pretty easy to fix. But one of the big things, too, is to be able to seed startups and help other entrepreneurs. So some of you guys might have, you know, at some point in your life drawn up an idea and been like, this thing's really cool, but I do not have the knowledge, don't have the interest in learning all the business stuff and all the marketing stuff and all the other things. So the other part of what we're trying to do with Section 67 is build in some of those aspects. It doesn't have to be a commercial venture. It is a nonprofit, and the idea is to help other people, but to help people do startups and help other entrepreneurs kind of get rolling, because that's something that's really important. So
from a project standpoint, some of those things you have listed there, are you guys interested in or open to having like people come down from, hypothetically speaking, Appleton, come down and like bring down something electronic and work with you guys on that?
Yeah, and that's the idea. Like the open work day is like, for instance, you know, somebody's got a laptop that's broken but doesn't know how to fix it. They could bring it in and, you know, we could have them sit down with somebody or maybe somebody's interested in helping for that day and saying, oh, yeah, you know, your power jack's bad. If you take it apart, I'll help you, put it back together and fix it. So, yeah, that's a lot of that stuff. Hackerspaces are pretty much exclusively membership, usually, unless they're supported by a giant company that's got a lot of money, which is, I think, the case of the one that I know of. But most of the time, they're all membership bases, so this is kind of like a gym club. We provide the space, we provide all the tools, the equipment, you provide a monthly membership, and kind of everybody wins, and you get access to all the equipment. The big thing is, too, is like Mitch kept reiterating, it's a network. That's what you're really paying for, is the ability to have a space to go sit down and run into other people and be able to drop on the mat. So.
Yeah, hang out with a lot of other geeks of so many different realms. And one of the things that's really amazing to me at Hackerspaces is, you know, if there's electronics and crafting people both doing things in their spaces, but it's kind of open, then the people doing sewing stuff start putting electronics in their clothing. And then people doing electronics start making clothing to put electronics in it. And then people start having blinky lights on cake decoration. And, you know, whatever. Things grow because of just the proximity of all these different creative people all together. And things happen that are totally surprising to the people involved. And people actually start making a living off of things that they have no idea they were even interested in. It turns out it's something they love. It's pretty cool. Let me show a little bit. Like, each hackerspace is unique. The people who start a hackerspace start creating a culture that they want to be a part of. Me being an anarchist, hippie, weirdo, punk-type person started a weirdo, anarchist, hippie, punk-type of environment, culture that attracted more anarchist, hippie, weirdo-type people in San Francisco or people who felt comfortable enough with that, and that attracts more and more. But like I said, each space is unique. There are other spaces that are very different, some that are... And we have consensus decision-making process, because that goes with the hippie weirdo one kind of thing. But other ones are democracy, majority rule. There's even some that have been benevolent dictator-run. But whatever, it's got to be one that the people involved enjoy and feel comfortable in. Some are incredibly diverse, like Noise Bridge. We have anything that members are interested in. We have a very diverse membership. We have classes and workshops in. So down at the bottom, there's a sewing machine, and that one there, you can't tell that that's bread being made, or bread making class. We've also had creme brulee classes, Chinese Mandarin language classes, anything people want to teach and learn. Also, Noise Bridge is totally open. We make all of our membership, all of our money from membership dues and donations. But you don't have to be a member to do anything at Noise Bridge. In fact, if anyone here wants to go to San Francisco at some point or thinks they might, ask me for one. So that's our radical openness. And we also have one rule and one rule only, and we have no leaders. That's the hippie weirdo punk thing. But our one rule is be excellent to one another. And everything else falls from there. And the culture attracts enough of an overlap that that subjective realm has enough overlap that it works. People work things out. It doesn't mean there's no conflict. You get one person or more in the room, there will be strife. But if people can work things through, then people get closer as a result, and things move forward. And that happens a few times with Noise Bridge. And every hackerspace in every organization and every relationship. So, but it can work out, and it does. It's really cool. So we're 501c3, nonprofit, tax exempt. Like Chris was saying, pointing out, and we pointed out, Tech Shop, that's for-profit corporation. There are others that are sort of in between, like NYC Resistor, down at the bottom, which is a for-profit corporation that doesn't make money. They're just there because LLC was so much easier to get than an 501c3. And that picture down there, that's a keyboard that you wear. It's built into your pants and you can type. And so Hack Pittsburgh is the other one there.
Yes. We are not for profit in the state of Pennsylvania, but we're sort of working on the 501c3 cards.
Yeah.
Kind of stuck there. But we're sort of a mix. I guess we are majority rule, and we have sort of an LLC because of our structure. And basically we have like a council, and more traditional where people vote in members, or voting council people, but basically anyone can join. We don't have any institutional membership. And we have regular meetups, and we do all sorts of projects. Basically whatever anyone comes in. And then we have a little picture there of our Space Balloon project. There's actually this hackerspace in Illinois, Workshop 88. They're actually in the summer for the but they decided at the beginning of the summer that they had enough of like making small things that blinked or something, so they wanted to like branch out into the world. And so they set up this competition, which is Hackerspaces in Space. And basically, so the challenge was he had to build this weather balloon. It would go in his... I don't know if it was weather balloon or not. Basically, he had to, like, less than $500 go into the near space and take pictures of the near space. And then the challenge was, who could do that and do it the fastest and the cheapest? So our space did that, and a couple weeks ago they launched their second balloon. The first one disappeared, but the second one made it to the ground. There was one guy in Louisville who has been trying to... He was trying to send a balloon, like, across the ocean. And I think he sent out, like, 23 or something in the past 3 years. So, two tries isn't bad. So that's one of the projects that we've done.
Yeah, and it is cool, because the Hackerspace have been collaborating on this project.
Like, the Power Wheels race.
Yeah. In Maker Faire, Detroit, there was a race of Power Wheels, which are these modified
Power Wheels.
Yeah, they're totally dangerous. So, the hackerspace scene, it really is a movement, because all the spaces really do collaborate, and the websites are all totally open. You can see hackerspace's finances and everything. And we can all learn from one another and support one another. I got, whatever the picture.
Oh, there you go.
So, that was supposed to be one. Anyways.
This morning.
So, hackers have been around for a long time. It was started, the term was started in the 50s in MIT from the Model Railroad Club. 1950s. This is before home computers or before anyone could break into a computer. It had nothing to do with breaking into computers or computers at all. It was about model railroads. And they could hack together these things that weren't available from the Lionel Corporation and do lots of cool things with their model railroads. Not to make money, but because they loved it. And it turns out some of them could make money from it. But that they loved it was the main thing. And it wasn't until really the 80s when the media needed some term to hang on these few people who broke into computers and did stupid things. And they called them hackers, which is kind of unfortunate, but, you know, media at work and at play. There's been some fantastic coverage of hacker spaces in the last couple of years in the very mainstream press. Here's one from the New York Times. Can't get more mainstream than that. It's called Inventors Wanted, Cool Tools Provided. So that was just earlier this year, and they highlighted mainly the MakerBot, NYC Resistor, but a whole bunch of people from hackerspaces around the country and the world, and just some photos from it. Those are the two people who started Tech Shop down there. It's a really cool photo. Too bad you can't see it too well. There's sparks flying, and it looks like a lightsaber. Also, there's DIY Bio in this picture here. There's another great story in Wired that mainly centered around NoiseBridge, and those are a bunch of my projects on a table where I was teaching people how to solder at one of my workshops. That was about a year ago. And there's another one from the New York Times, Revenge of the Nerds. Which space is that one? Anyways, it's been in the Christian Science Monitor and Fox TV News and CBS and ABC and NBC and you name it. We've gotten really positive press everywhere.
Still some of my pictures.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know. I mean, the biggest thing is to talk about this is just to kind of explain. It's awesome to have Mitch here to explain what the hell Hackerspace is and why I wanted to start one 2 years ago. And then the idea here is that, you know, we've got this opportunity in Madison. There's a lot of really smart folks around, especially you guys who are all interested in this kind of stuff. And the objective is just to be able to make it so that an individual can get out there, have a space to work out of. You could rent a desk, you could pay for membership, or you could just come and hang out and have the ability to have that. That's kind of a third place. It's not your house, it's not your basement, it's not in your garage, you're out in the community because you're with other people doing this. Really just to be able to provide anything. Again, we've talked a lot about kind of the hardware-focused aspect of it. Shortly we'll be doing a lot of the electronics and software. The Arduino session right after this, but
really a hackerspace is anybody. You can hack cookies, you can hack ice cream, you can bring liquid nitrogen in and make ice cream out of cream, and it's awesome. There's just so many different ways to do all these things, and it doesn't have to have anything to do with hardware. It doesn't have to have anything to do with electronics. It doesn't have anything to do with software. It can be anybody doing anything. It's just, you know, really the objective is just to get out and teach other people about the things that all of us kind of love uniquely. So
these are some of the, it's really hard to tell what this is. And the dorms, actually, you guys probably know Justin Beck. He's running around doing the Parallel Kingdom stuff. Justin and I lived together for a year in a house, and then prior to that, we were together, or in the same dorm building. So we got bored in our dorm room, which doesn't have a hell of a lot of space, and we decided to build a robot truck that was controlled with a computer. And then we added a camera to the front of it. There's a nice JVC DV camera that we borrowed from the resident's life office on the first floor and didn't tell them what we were doing with it. And then we put a tablet PC on the top and put it on this big truck. And then a really good friend of ours who's, if anybody's got any bitches about Visual Studio, I can send them straight to the Visual Studio development team, because that's what this guy does now. But he wrote a whole bunch of C-sharp code that runs on the tablet that was interpreting what was coming through the cameras and then driving directly out to the servos to drive the truck around. So you had it so you could chase colors. So you could just tap on the tablet PC and it would sit and run down the hallway and chase whatever color you're after. With a nice red notebook that it would always follow. And when it got to the end of the hallway, it found the red fire extinguisher and went for that instead. I've done quite a few things and it's been a lot of fun. And I'd really like to, I'm graduating from college, just finishing up a master's in mechanical engineering in September, and wanted something fun to do. And so this is kind of the, I'm going to take a year off roughly and get Sector 67 going. I'd like to have some help doing it, so it's the hope.
Question.
Yep.
It says advanced manufacturing.
Yes. That would be the rapid prototyping, the laser cutting, that kind of stuff.
So
CNC.
Is that put in there totally because you're looking at advanced manufacturing being that kind of stuff and you just think it's cool for what you want to do? Or is it to put any kind of potential corporate sponsor appeal in there?
There's so the tagline for this is Center for Prototyping Technology and Advanced Manufacturing. And part of the reason for that is because prototyping is something key. Technology encompasses everything, and advanced manufacturing encompasses these movements towards the MakerBot riprap stuff, towards playing around with kind of using the CNC stuff to make one-off parts and products, which a lot of the zero kind of turnaround time assembly lines do that now. But, I mean, sure, it's got to tag into the community in terms of Wisconsin with their manufacturing.
Well, that's why I wondered, so that is part of what...
I mean, that's part of the idea, yeah. Okay. And the space is entitled to encompass a lot of things.
Well, tell people how you got your original funding.
The key, well, that's what I was just going to get at. So the key really is, though, is appealing to who's going to fund us, right? So if initially I'm getting this running at $0, I either need to, it's a chicken or egg problem with all these hackerspaces to get started. You either need members to pay in cash out of their pocket for nothing to get the pool big enough that you can start a space, or you need to find somebody who's just going to give you free cash.
Right.
So when I had done this, I was doing the business plan competitions, and that's a huge business pitch, is being able to say you're doing prototyping tech and advanced manufacturing, especially in our Wisconsin community.
So it is partly buzzword.
It happens to play very nicely.
Chris could have won second place.
Yeah. So you have no ethics,
basically.
This isn't the lack of integrity. It's using what's available for what he already wants. You just give them the buzzword that they want to hear to apply.
You're hacking this.
So they gave Sector 67 $11,000.
Because he used those buzzwords.
And yeah, but this wasn't only this. It was the whole shebang. It's about community. It's about doing all these other realms of hacking. The word hacking.
I'm using that. I'm actually using
these personal keywords.
No. I added. So you're calling keywords not buzzwords.
There you go.
Okay. No, I added personal advanced manufacturing.
Sure.
Because in part of the reason for Northeast Wisconsin is advanced manufacturing is kind of a buzzword up there.
Just so you guys know, Bob's looking at building a hackerspace, and he's going to talk about it after the Arduino session. I'm not going to steal your thunder, but I will give him a good pitch. He's going to talk about kind of building a community up in like the Appleton, the Northeast region of Wisconsin. The problem is they don't have a giant focal point city where a whole bunch of people are.
We don't have actual critical mass.
Yep.
So you have an intentional community.
Yep.
And what I'm looking at, I mean, me personally working on this, is hacking the community part, not the hardware or software. So that's what I'm focused on. And what Chris has been talking about, Mitch, is more the hardware.
Well, actually, we're talking about the same thing. We're providing infrastructure, just like BarCamp is an unconference. We provide the people who organize this and put an incredible amount of effort in doing so gave us the infrastructure for us to give a talk for all of you who are giving talks to give a talk for all of us to be here to learn and share from one another through this whole experience. And that's community that we're creating here, temporary community. Hackerspace is just a temporary, everything ends at some point, but hopefully that endures through time for a number of years. And we're creating community. We really are hacking community along the way. We're hacking law in order to morph nonprofit law or for-profit law to give us the corporate structure and insurance, et cetera, and also to be able to sign a lease with a corporate entity so we can do what we do. All of this is hacking. We're doing all of this so we can do what we love. And that's really kind of the conclusion to the whole thing, and is that the world is full of people who do stuff most of their lives or spent doing stuff they don't like. We spend so much of our lives doing things we don't like. And in particular, so many of us spend 8 or 10 or 12 hours a day at a job. And that's really, really sad because that's a third of our lives. And if we spend a third of our lives doing things we don't like, no matter what it is, if it's a job or whatever, we're going to dream about that, and that's another third of our lives. And if we spend the other third watching television, well, when have you had a chance to live a life that you find fulfilling? You have to make time to explore what you love and find what is fulfilling to you. And through hackerspaces, through community, we can support one another in each finding that for ourselves. And the reason I do what I do is because I love doing it. And I also love giving other people an opportunity to explore more of what they love in their lives. Imagine what your life would be like if you spent a little bit of more time doing more of what you love. How much cooler can you make your life? No matter where you are in your life can be just a little bit cooler. And if you keep doing that, what would your life be like in a year or two or three? And imagine what the world would be like if some small percentage of the population were doing that. And what if even higher percentages? So anyways, these are my hopes and dreams. I think collectively we all share that. So I hope we were able to infect you with some. If you want more resources, there's a couple links to news stories that we showed. And hackerspaces.org is a website that is sort of a clearinghouse for everything hackerspace. It's an international organization based in Vienna, where they have this document, Hackerspace Design Patterns, that give a lot of information on how to start a space and keep a space running. And they have their own email list for discussions, and there's a monthly call-in for hackerspaces to present new stuff and learn from other spaces, and et cetera, et cetera. So that's a cool place to check out.
Yeah, the neat thing about hackerspaces.org, too, is it's got a voluntary listening. They aren't going out and finding all the spaces, but it's this place that you can list your space. So if you're not from Madison, they have a listing of everywhere else that there are spaces. There's one up in La Crosse. There's one in Milwaukee called Bucketworks, and you're closer to Milwaukee. Otherwise, we're, of course, in Madison. So it's cool.
And anywhere you go in the world, look on hackerspaces.org, and you'll find instant friends. Everywhere I go, I can go on there and get put up anywhere in the world. So it's really, really amazingly cool. It's better than Couchsurfing. And again, there's our contact info, and I forgot to put the Twitter thingies on there, so ask us.
Yeah, if you want to, I've got business cards. Otherwise, tomorrow we're doing, we will all be over at the Engineering Center's building from 3 until 6, which is probably going to turn into like 3 until probably 9, because if people show up at 6, it might take them 2 hours to build a kit and another hour for us to clean up. So feel free to stop by anytime at all, even if you want to just come by and hang out and talk.
Yeah, it's really cool that people get together and make things. And then again, stickers and stuff. And we have a few. Yeah, feel free to take stickers. They're free. And we have a few minutes for questions if anyone has them, or ask us later if you find us too.
Chris, have you tapped into the Cascade to get some of the recycled computer equipment?
I've been thinking about, so as we get, once we get the space and have, like, desks and chairs, then, yeah, we need to start focusing on how to kind of grow it out in terms of what resources we need. Swap and that kind of stuff. And actually, I've had a bunch of friends who have been, one of my friends went to China, and his dad didn't want his acetylene torch sitting in the garage while he was gone for a year. So that got wheeled in my grad student office, which has been sitting in front, very threateningly in front of my desk for about a couple months. So we've gotten quite a few things through that way. But yeah, Cascade's a good thought. I was thinking about going to some of the metal recyclers too and saying, you know, if you guys have big chunks of metal, you know, things that are bigger than total scrap, we'd be happy to buy them back for the same, you know, same price. Yeah.
I'm wondering what the new building is, like parking, how big is it?
Oh, yeah, sure. I have a...
You have floor plan on the website?
I don't have a floor plan on the website yet, no.
Because we want to do that.
On September 7th is our next meeting. So we have monthly meetings right now. If you sign up, there's an announcements list. And you can sign up in there and get emails about it. Otherwise, our calendar's got all of our stuff that's going on. But it is at 2100 Winnebago Street, which is up in the Atwood neighborhood. If you go there now, there's nothing there because it's just a big building. But as of September, October, we will be out there. I'll zoom this way out so you guys can see where it is. It's actually not a whole hell of a lot super far from here.
Essentially, the Capitol's right here, and then we're up here. It's just past the, the Ahara River. Yeah, that cuts through. Google says from all the way over here to here is 18 minutes by bicycle. And we're a block and a half north of the bicycle path, and then we're about a block south of East Washington, so it's a really good spot in terms of transit. There's a ton of parking. The space and the real estate owners own all the buildings roughly in the whole block, and they have parking lots between all of them. And so we have like 20 or 30 parking spots, so that should be very easy, especially you know at night when they expect the majority of the people will be out there. There's a lot of traditional commercial buildings and stuff out there, so it should be pretty good for parking. And then it's 2,500 square feet. It's an old garage-ish. It's really cool space, actually. It's kind of the growing between three buildings. But it's got a good roof and all that stuff, so nothing scary, but it's just three buildings kind of growing together over time. It's got high, like 20-foot high ceilings, so it's a nice open, airy space. We got a good deal on rent, and they're covering all the utilities and the rent rate, so we have a fixed cost month to month.
Is Madison Gas doing the utilities for you?
No, they aren't, but they are going to cover pulling in three phase to run all the machines, so it's nice of them. So, yeah, so it should be a pretty good setup.
Yep. So what's this plan for building it out? Are you looking for volunteers to come on?
Yeah, the best thing is sign up on the announcements list, because I cannot, like, you can come and talk to me and give me your business card, and I can guarantee I will forget. If you go to sector67.org, there is...
And by the way, the workshop is not at 2100 Winnebago, no. It's at the university, because yep. The building's not ready yet.
Yes, it's over at engineering. Like I said, come up and grab these, because they're easy. There's a nice link right at the top of here that says announcements. You cannot miss it. It's only one of, like, seven options.
But right at the top, all you have to do is put in your name and your email address and hit join the announcements list. And,
yeah, if you're all interested... Please do that.
I don't spam out that much. It's like once every 2 weeks to once a month at this point. And I'll make a separate list later on. That's the contacts. Just the more of the every week or every couple of days you'll get emails on the other one. So this will always remain a, this is kind of updates with the space in general, kind of what's going on. Otherwise, we're on Twitter. We are on IRC. If you guys are super nerdy, you know about IRC. There's RSS feeds for the forum, for the blog. We're on Facebook, which no one likes anymore. There's a live chat on here. If you click on the live chat, yes, the big Java thing pops up and says, are you sure you want to run Java? Because, yes, it's Java. We can do all kinds of bad things with it. But it's just the IRC live web chat client. So if you go on there, there's usually four or five of us sitting on there. I can tell you it picks up generally between 5 p.m. and about 3 a.m., otherwise the calendar's up there. It's got all the events, including the stuff that we're at today. It's got the cider session over engineering. The general meetings are always the first Tuesday, 7 p.m. monthly, no matter what. So you can always put those down.
And like I said, I'm hoping that the next meeting, it's not listed right now on the website, but I will be emailing out in the announcement system changing it. I got to talk to the real estate developers, but I'd like to do the next meeting out there, the space is cool. More of a meet and greet, the tour, kind of like less presentations. But if you look down towards the bottom, below the calendar, there's all of our past meetings. I've got attendance listed on there. I've got all the topics that were talked about, what people were there. No, we don't take videos of the meetings, and we don't do any audio or any of that kind of stuff, so you need to be there, which is part of the whole networking component. I'm not going to really farm out that aspect. I'll list what's all been talked about so you know what's going on, but we aren't going to try and document stuff otherwise except for what people put on the website. There's a forum, too, if you want to use, all kinds of stuff. Try to make sure that there's enough places to get to us.
Generally, how does the membership work? Like, ballpark, like, how much am I going to
Per month? Like, part memberships are anywhere... On spaces, they're anywhere between $35 a month and like $175 for like a desk at the space. What we're starting with is $100 a month for anywhere the full time job if you're a student, and it's $50. And that gets you access to the whole space. Right now, because we're early on, part of the reason why I don't have all the stuff listed on the website is because stuff isn't completely firmed up. I'd like to do 24-hour access, which is really normal with all of the spaces, and that's my 100% intent. Right now I'm working with the insurance company, though, and they're up in the air on things. So we got to figure out from them what they want to do. The real estate developer is fine with anything, but we just need to figure out what the insurance company wants to do.
And there will be free events.
Yes, there will be free events yet. You do not have to. In fact, that's the number one frequently asked question is, can I be involved for free? And yes, you can absolutely be involved for free. You do not have to pay. But if you want 24-hour access to space, you want to use our expensive tools, you got to help pay for it, you know, in that sense. But you definitely don't have to pay to be involved or come to the community events or the free meetings and all that stuff. So. We intend to hold free classes too, so some stuff will be paid for. But the intention is really to be a community hub, not necessarily have money to cash out.
Yeah, I see. Great.
Yep.
For the memberships, they count as. So essentially, does it count as a donation?
It doesn't, because you're getting a service out of it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not tax exempt. Yep. If you donate, then it's tax exempt, but if you pay membership, then it's not. Okay. Yeah.
Are you looking for people for future classes?
Yes, what we're going to do, what my intent is to be able to pay people to do classes, which isn't normal with Hackerspace necessarily. Some do that, some don't. Yeah. So what I was going to do is do it. People who go to the classes is probably going to be like $20 an hour. Usually the classes are about 2 hours, so it's like $40 a class, which isn't really that bad. If you think about going out to MATC and taking like welding, for instance, it can cost like $1,200. Learning how to weld for $40 is an awesome bargain. And then what we can do then is pay the people who are teaching at $20 an hour, and then the rest of the money goes into maintaining that equipment or buying new equipment now that people are taking those classes. Which scales really nicely. Because if we have 100 people taking a welding class, now we have 100 times $20 available, and we can go buy a new welder, and now all those 100 people can use new equipment. So that's the goal, trying to make things scalable.
Otherwise,
you have
no legs.
This one, it's paid. Yeah.
Putting together a project for
Burning Man. Burning Man's going on now, isn't it? Yeah, so no, I've actually never been to Burning Man. So everyone I know goes every year, but I'm always curious about like this.
Just erase here.
Anything else? Otherwise, right now we'll start doing the Arduino class. So if you guys are interested, we got to go find another table so we can extend this.